Welcome to Coaching Conversations with Margo Myers. This podcast is produced by Shipley Coaching, where discovery inspires growth.
Hi, I'm Margo Myers, an executive and leadership coach, and I help people become more effective in their roles, whether it's leadership, communication, or career success. And in this podcast, we're talking everything coaching. Coaching helps you maximize your potential to reach your goals, create a plan, and stay committed to your goals. And today I'm talking with David Graff, the CEO of Shipley Communication and Shipley Coaching. He's also an executive coach, a retired Air Force major after 27 years. He's been married 38 years with 7 kids and 13 grandchildren. Congratulations, David. And he also participates in Ironman competitions. And, you know, the world is a different place in the last few weeks. It's changed pretty radically with the coronavirus pandemic, and it's impacting people in both their personal and their professional lives on a number of levels. And I believe this is the perfect time for leaders to step up. This is really when we need to see great leadership. And David, you're a leader. You've worked with leaders over the course of your career. What kinds of qualities are most needed from leaders during times like these?
That's a great question. I think years ago, as I was working on developing my ability as a leader, I came across a consultant. What I really liked about this consultant was he had it narrowed it down to 3 simple competencies that he says all great leaders would have these 3 traits or qualities. And one is they're very consistent. They're reliable and they're predictable. And I thought about that. And as I've worked with leaders at all levels for the last almost 20 years now through coaching and just leadership development opportunities, I share that with every leader. And it's interesting the feedback that I get on that some feel like, well, if I'm consistent and I'm reliable and or predictable, then, you know, then that's really not leadership. A great leader keeps people guessing. Or a great leader just keeps people off just a little bit so that they never really know where the leader's going. And I've really challenged that thought and that process. So I think to me, that those are the 3, still to me, 3 core. I've added one that I think has been missing over the last 10 plus years on my journey. And that is they need a leader that's also human. In fact, there's a book I read a couple years ago, and I've kind of adapted the concept, but it's what people require from a leader today is 2 things. They need a leader that's both smart and human. And done a lot of work in the Department of Defense where I've met with and worked with a lot of leaders that they've been promoted because they're smart, right? Highly intelligent, highly competent. And they've learned over their careers to outsource the human component. I have people that take care of, people are my most important asset, thus I have people that take care of them. And what they've really done is they've separated themselves from that role. People in the workplace are wanting a leader to be both of those things for them, not to have some outsourced leader in the department say, okay, that's the person I go to if I need a good leader. So those are the 4 things that I work on that I try to think about as being very consistent, reliable, predictable, and human.
Yeah, how do those show up in a leader? Let's start with being consistent. Why is that important?
I think it would give people a sense of calmness. They can count on the leader to when it's good times, the leader acts and behaves a certain way, and when there's tough times, the leader acts and behaves the same way. It gives them a sense of safety, security. I believe at least there's somebody that I can look to be strong to get us through this problem, this whatever circumstance or situation. A lot of work in the military that I've been in, that's been a real important aspect when you have a battle that you're fighting. Do you have a leader that you have confidence in? And consistency.
Absolutely.
Since, consistency to me gives that sense of confidence that I know what they're going to do, which again goes back to the predictable part. I just know when this happens, a leader's going to do these things.
Right. What about reliable?
When you talk about reliability, that to me is the real deep character component. that just says that what they say they're going to do, they actually do. When they make, you know, promises, I have confidence that they're going to keep those promises, and that they care about me. If they say they care about me, they show that through a very reliable behavior and performance.
Yeah, I love the character aspect. I think that is probably, you know, one of the top things for me is having that honesty and that integrity and being somebody who is going to be, that I can count on that in them. Yeah. People are not going to change and that I know I can count on them. And then predictable, how does that play into leadership?
When you talk about predictable, again, it's something that I can look to as an employee, as a worker, a follower. From a behavior perspective, I can see a leader behaving in a predictable way that gives me a sense of confidence that no matter, again, what the circumstance situation is, they act and behave very consistently. So it's hard to separate all three of these, right?
Right.
So they're really kind of, they come together as a core of who I am as a leader. So I don't know that I could be predictable and not be consistent, or be consistent and not be reliable. So they all, to me, they all just kind of feed off each other.
Well, and I love the addition of being human too, because I think a lot of times leaders think they have to be tough and in control at all times and all of that. And I know that in my leadership journey, being vulnerable mm-hmm. has probably been one of the biggest keys for me. And that has actually strengthened my ties with the people that I am leading, and has probably had the most impact. But it's that being human and admitting, hey, no, I don't know everything. I don't have to be the smartest person in the room.
I had a leader.
And being a leader in that way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I had a leader just a couple weeks ago came up to me when we're having these conversations, and he came up and says, so what you're saying is when I go into the office, I have to go around and I have to give everybody a hug. Now, this is before the distancing part, but you know, in other words, in his mind, being human was just being this really, almost with disgust on his face, this touchy-feely person.
Soft.
This soft person. This guy, I'm like, no, that's not it at all. He said, do you have a vision of where you want to take this group, this team? He says, yeah. I said, well, how do you share that? How do you get down where you can share that to the humans that you're responsible for trying to, you know, you can't just say it in words. They want to be able to feel and understand, what do you mean by that vision, and how do you plan on getting there? And those kind of things. So being human does not mean soft. Having a level of humility as what you know, vulnerability, I use humility as a key word. And humility is not a weakness. Actually, it's a core component of trust, that I know, they know that I'm learning. They know that I'm growing just like they are. I just happen to be in a position where I'm responsible for getting a group of people to a certain destination. So the humility piece is a big part of that.
How are they most effective during these times like we're seeing today, when a lot of people feel like, you know, we're in crisis, we're staying at home, or we're being very careful if we are essential workers? There's a lot of uncertainty. We haven't been through this before. So how do you see great leaders being most effective during these types of times?
I think there's several things. I think one of the things, I was reading this great article this last week that gave several points on that I really liked and agreed with. And I think one of them is, when you talk about communication, being able to a great leader is in communication, but they're in communication with each human, right? Now, if I have an organization of 1,000 people, there's really probably no way I can have a one-on-one effective communication, but I can make sure that the people that are directly reporting to me, I'm in great communication and expecting them to do the same thing throughout my organization, so that each person, and not just sending out memos and not just sending out emails to say, hey, hope everybody's fine, here's the updates type of thing. There has to be an aspect, because people need, through coaching, and I know you've found this out too, right now the biggest part of coaching that people are needing is just somebody to vent to. Somebody just to listen to. I don't need you to do anything. I just need you. So there's a level of empathic listening that's needed today. And I don't think that's a skill that a lot of smart leaders have developed over the years, because that's a human skill. but yet it's required. And so being able to be a good listener and be there to listen to the problems that people are facing, and then give them confidence and assure them through this, I call it positive, I call it proactive communication of some kind that just says, it's going to be okay. It's going to be hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We don't know how this is going to end, but I do know that it will end and we'll be okay when it's done, right? And how do you communicate that in a way that's positive? And let's look at the things that we are, you know, doing and that we are able to have control over. So I think that's the other centering point. I did a lot of work with Franklin Covey over the years. I was a senior consultant with him for almost 20 years. And one of the models that I've used still today is circle of influence, circle of concern. And just sit down and I've done this with folks, just sit down with those two circles and say, let's just talk about what's going on in your world today and put it in the circles. And when they can see it in black and white, that all of a sudden it's like, man, everything that's in my brain is out in the circle of concern. There's really nothing I can do about those things. It just makes them say, yeah, so what is something you can do? And it begins to change. And those are things I think leaders should be doing. They should be using tools and using the ability to communicate well, listen first, be able to listen and understand, be able to communicate positively and give assurance and confidence that it's going to be okay. Again, it's not going to be perfect. I'm not claiming I know what it's going to be like. It won't be like it was a month ago. I guarantee you that. It's going to be a different world when we come through this, but we will come through it because we have in the past. History is repeated. So that's what a leader does. It's just ability to understand themselves first and then in the level of humility and openness to that, and then be able to share that with each individual.
I think part of the component that I hear you talking about too, David, is trust. It's mm-hmm. It's having that relationship, that ability to create connections, real connections with the people that you're working with, and being that empathic listener. Because you're right, a lot of times people, they don't necessarily want you to come in and fix anything for them. They just want you to know, hey, you have my back and can I support you, right? And let people talk through and process whatever it is they're going through. And then a lot of times just through that process, they can come to their own conclusions. But having that leader be there for them can be so important when people are feeling uncertain and unsettled.
Yeah. My daughter calls me almost every day. She's works for a company. She's in a call center for a pretty, very large company. And they have sent everybody to work from home. And so she's not as computer literate as far as how to set things up and whatnot. And she is really struggling. She can't seem to get things working and the company won't, you know, they're overwhelmed with what's going on. And just almost every day, I've got to just kind of help her, talk her through exactly what we're talking about, which really should be what a leader's, her boss, her leader should be doing that for her, right? But yet she feels alone and lost. And I think that's probably replicated by the hundreds of thousands across the country, across the world, where, you know, again, people are just sent home to go figure out how to work from home, and which is not in a normal world, a normal situation. So I think a lot of people are scared and worried, as well they should be, right? And that's where great leaders really, again, step up and connect.
Well, and one of the things about leaders, at least the great leaders that I think of that I've worked with over the years or have worked with, you know, through coaching, is they have a pretty high level of self-awareness. You have to know yourself first, right, before you can lead others. And talk a little bit about the importance of that self-awareness in leadership.
So when talk about a leader being smart, that's I really talk about the technical competence, right? And then a leader being human. Now we're talking about emotional intelligence, right? And there's been all kinds of books and a lot of research around emotional intelligence. And the ability that a leader has to be emotionally intelligent begins, all the work out there starts with self-awareness, right? I can't get into self-management or self-regulation or organizational kinds of awareness things if I can't even understand where I'm starting from, my starting point. And so self-awareness is a big, big factor. It's the starting point of emotional intelligence. And so that's, I believe it is a place where a lot of very smart leaders aren't necessarily comfortable going, because it's a behavior that is not natural in those that are highly intelligent. If you use Myers-Briggs, use any kind of personality instruments or tools, there's usually a pretty clear separation between right brain thinkers and left brain thinkers. And a lot of left brain folks don't necessarily have the human skills in their nature. Likewise, a lot of right brain folks don't necessarily have the same level of critical thinking and skills and those kind of things. Doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It just means that there's work that needs to be done on either side to work and understand and to lead. Because if I'm a leader now, I'm leading groups of people that are all different. And so if I can't even understand myself to the level where I understand how I'm showing up on a regular basis and the impact that is having, then how can I expect to lead others? Kind of how I, so that self-awareness is literally the entry point to being a human, I believe.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I wanted to talk about, you mentioned assessments like Myers-Briggs, and I mean, there's StrengthsFinders, there's a number of DISC, all kinds of different assessments out there. And you came up with the four lenses assessment. Tell me a little bit about that and how you came up with that idea. First, what it is and how you came up with it.
So first off, I'll tell you, I didn't come up with it. A good friend of mine, my brother-in-law, his name is George Nelson, back in the 1980s, started a company that was working with the criminal justice system on really, really effective rehabilitating folks in the criminal justice system. And through that process, he came across and developed this instrument that he used at the time called, I think it was called Living Colors, where it was just basically using David Kiersey's information from Please Understand Me. So David Kiersey is kind of the father of temperament, although, you know, it goes back 2,000 years, but I'd say he's the modern person. So, Myers-Briggs has 16 personality types. It's a good tool used to help from a self-awareness perspective. David Kiersey came along and says, well, a little more complicated than what most people need. So he came up with the four temperaments. So George, anyway, was a teacher in drama and had this desire to really help people to understand the self-awareness piece. So he designed it at the time. This is back in the 80s and used it for years. The 2000, when I basically started my company, I had used his instrument, used it for several years in the military as just, again, an opening tool for any classes that I was doing at the time, just to help people get their minds open, get their thinking open. The concept, the principle is this: we have a story that we tell. It's about when you go and you plant a seed. If you just plant a seed, of course, on rocks, it's just gonna die up, shrivel up, and die. But if you can plant it in some good soil and rich soil, and you nurture it, it can grow. Well, we call them seeds of learning. When anytime somebody's trying to learn something new, they usually come in and their brains are like rocks, right? It's like, I've already learned what I'm going to learn, and I dare you to try to teach me something, whatever it is. And so what we learned is the four lenses process helped people prepare them to be open for learning. It kind of just set them in this initial stage of, okay, maybe I don't know everything. Maybe there is something I can learn about whatever it is. So that was the initial tool that we developed and used as part of our, we have an emotional intelligence course that we designed back in 1998, 99. So Four Lenses was the initial. So George Nelson is the IP owner of that, but we have the exclusive right. We're the only distributor of that instrument. And so I built my company around it. And that's on the Shipley communication side. All of our training incorporates Four Lenses as an initial tool. We haven't used it as a tool like DISC or like Myers-Briggs in the sense where it's a standalone tool, although it can be used. But it's mainly that my intent is it's always been used as a pre-learning for anything to follow, whether it's leadership development. The Air National Guard, for example, has been using it for almost 10 years in their diversity training. So it's just used as a block in beginning the development of self-awareness.
What do people learn through doing this assessment? What do they learn about their temperament?
Well, they learn that their spouses are usually idiots through the process. No, I'm just teasing. What they learn is, honestly, it's a very, very live and interactive session. So the learning is very, very current in its adult learning principles. So there's a lot of energy, a lot of the way that it's delivered and walkthrough. The first thing they learn is something they already knew, and that is their uniqueness as a human being. So they find themselves sitting with a group of people that are like them, and they are able to kind of understand, and I already knew I was kind of this way, but to actually see other people that I'm sitting with and talking and communicating with, it's just kind of amazing. It's like all of a sudden bringing back family members from ever. It's like, oh, you know, I'm glad to know other people exist. So they learn about themselves, but what I share even in the classes is you didn't learn anything new that you didn't already know. It's just now out in the open. And sitting across from you in this, and so we use four colors associated to the four lenses. Then they're tied to the four temperaments, Kirsi's temperaments. And so there's the NT and the NF, which are, in terms of our colors, the green and the blue, and they're opposites of each other. And then we have the SP and the SJ, and they're opposites of each other. So sitting in this room, we now have them divided up in these opposites, and we start having these exercises and conversations. So step one of the whole process is just understand where you are and where are you sitting. But the learning process begins. What I always share is in most cases, when people take an instrument, the process ends with the instrument and the debrief of the instrument, right? Here's who you are. Here's what you need to know, and so on and so forth. And then people are left to go away and do something with it. What I say in our process, and what's key to me is that the process begins when the instrument ends, because it means nothing to know that you know that you're an intuitive thinker if you can't understand how that is impacting how you show up to the other temperaments, right? Or that I'm an intuitive feeler or blue in our instance, and how is that impacting folks that I show up? How's it impacting my family first, right? Family and friends, because I'm big on the principles that of learning. We could learn to be great leaders in our families. We wouldn't have to worry about being great leaders in the workplace. It would happen naturally. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my main emphasis is really to work with families. So these four temperaments help. It is strictly the first step of a journey. And that's what I tell folks too. It is not the end of a destination. Now that you now know that you are a blue or a green or a gold, it's not over with. That's just the beginning of our conversation of self-awareness and emotional intelligence.
So I'm really curious what you are.
Oh, well.
What temperament? Can you reveal that?
What I would share with you and what I would say in my class is that I'm actually a very mature person. We've added another module. We did it about 5-6 years ago, formally, probably 10 years informally. I tested it for several years, this conversation around maturity, because that is a question. People are like, that's very in the class. So what were you and what, you know,
right.
And the reality is that my top two, for example, I'm an SP. So an orange in our world, which is a person that really strives for freedom, the ability to not be bound down by rules and regulations and so on and those sort, entrepreneurial type of a human being, right? Followed by the opposite. So my second is actually the SJ. And that's what I share in the classes too, is that that you never can just highlight one, because you totally could miss it. You need to understand me as a total human, not just one dimension, right? And I think that's one of the things that sets us apart from is taking it to this maturity conversation. So I would be an orange gold in terms of our content that we have, which means that, I like freedom and the ability to act and behave, but I also then do that in a structured way. So okay. I'm not just all out there, you know, you'll never find me on a racetrack trying to go 170, 180 miles an hour and putting myself at risk. I would never do that. But if I could be in a controlled environment, in a race car at a reasonable price. You know, so there's just a difference in how I approach the world. Right? And all of us are that way.
So tell me a little bit more about the maturity and how that relates to leadership.
So, and this I think is one of the biggest factors today, is what's needed is this concept of maturity. And just in its simple form, I can describe it using two walls. And if I had the left, if I'm in a room, and I would say the left-hand wall would represent what we call low maturity, and then the right-hand wall would represent what I refer to high maturity. And I'm really clear about language. Language is important. So I'm not talking about immaturity. A lot of people go, oh, well, that was it. No, I'm just talking about low maturity and high maturity, and it's a continuum, and it's connected, right? So there's a connection between these two. Two words to describe the low mature wall, it's about pride and self-interest. So when I'm facing the low mature wall, what I'm really most interested in is me and how things are affecting me and what I think we should be doing and so on and so forth. Whereas the high mature wall, the two words that describe that are humility and others. So what I mean by others, it could be me and my spouse. What are we trying to get to? What are we as a family trying to get to? What are we as a team trying to get to? So what it is, it's just not about me, right? It's about us trying to get to something. I'm also big about results. So I always have results kind of at the end of this, I got to be moving towards trying to achieve something. So a couple principles about this maturity conversation is, one, we're all on this continuum. Mm-hmm. Two, we are all facing one or the other wall. You know, there's not a neutral. And whatever wall you're facing, that is where you're gravitating towards. And that principle came up. There's several books and a movie, I think Through a Dog's Eyes. I forget what it was called. I just watched it here recently. But then my son, it's a surfing principle or whatever, too. It's wherever your eyes look, that's where you go. So when you're driving at 220 miles an hour, if you glance over at the car next to you, you'll hit it, right? That's just what they tell you. So maturity is the same way. Whichever wall you're facing, that's where you'd be moving towards. Another principle is the default wall. If I'm not aware that the walls exist, the default wall is the low mature wall. Mm-hmm. We as humans naturally default to our self-interest. So if I find myself in an organization that's not led well, I don't have a leader that I have a lot of confidence in, I don't know the vision of where the leader is trying to take us to, I'm not really clear, what do I revert to? I revert to my own mission, my own vision, my own values, right?
Right.
And so it's a natural. So the only way that I can revert, that I can actually approach the mature wall has to be a deliberate, intentional, cognitive act for me to behave that way. And so how does that impact leadership today is maturity is a key. Leaders, when they're struggling, if I haven't practiced this mature behavior of thinking what is best for this human and our team to get us where we need to get to, when we're pressurized, we naturally revert back to what we've practiced the most. I don't know if you've done any sports or whatever, but I coached a lot of sports.
Oh, yes.
I would coach these boys in basketball and I would have them practice shooting over and over again in practice. And then we get into a game, and in the stressful game, what do they revert back to? Throwing the ball at the basket, right? I'm like, I don't know. We kept practicing this in practice, and eventually they would, you know, get it. But if you don't practice, if I don't practice facing the mature wall and putting myself aside for the greater good of the team and the organization, then nobody's going to have confidence in me as a leader because they pick up on it pretty quickly that I'm self-interested.
So it sounds like you're also talking about servant leadership.
Yep. Yep. That's the principle. That's the concept. I just put it in a simpler, you know, context where people can sit. So now as I work with leadership teams, I constantly am asking, so which wall are you facing?
Yeah. Right?
As you're trying to move this team forward, which in this conversation, which wall are you facing? Because I can tell very quickly by your language, which wall you're facing. Well, I'm really frustrated. People aren't doing what I've asked them to do. And why aren't they listening to my instructions? And why, you know, and I just pause and stop and say, okay, you just used a bunch of I words. And I don't know, but to me, it sounds like you might be facing low mature wall. What do you think? I've been in leadership meetings where leaders, and all of a sudden somebody would say, wait a second, I think we're, most of us are facing this low mature wall. Let's stop and pause. And what do we need to do to move over and face the mature wall?
Yeah. How can we turn around?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, David, I certainly appreciate your thoughts on leadership today, especially in these times when leadership is so necessary and people rely on great leaders to step up. And these are the types of times when I think great leaders, they have a chance to shine. They really do.
Yeah, I agree.
So thank you for joining me. And I hope to have you on the podcast again.
I definitely will look forward to being back, and thank you for the time today. This has been great.
Well, thanks, David. And we hope you'll join us for the next episode of Coaching Conversations with Margo Myers. Don't forget to check out the Shipley Company website at theshipleycompany.com. You'll find articles there, links to other podcasts, and you can learn more about our programs, including our ACTP course for coach certification. You can also learn about partnering with us for our leadership engagement course. We're here to share discovery that inspires growth.